Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Mile High Hockey Lab.
Mile High Hockey Lab.
Hello and welcome to the Mile High Hockey Lab. My name is Adrian Hernandez. I am joined today by Evan, Ezra, and Jackie. We're going to be talking all things Colorado Avalanche. We have lots and lots to talk about today. We will also be having a guest from On the Forecheck, the Predators SB Nation site, Brian Baston. We're really excited to have him on. We got a pretty important matchup between the Avalanche and Predators coming up tomorrow night. So, with that said, please give us a follow, a subscribe, a like, and send it all over to your Avalanche fans. Let's get going and let's drop the puck. So, first things first, let's talk about our poll of the week, which I think is a hot topic right now because, and it's a good hot topic. It's a good problem to have, is like I like to say. It's who is going to stick around for the Avalanche once all these healthy players start to come back. We saw a lot of call-ups in the meantime of all these injuries. Ben Myers, Jean-Luc Foudy, Jacob McDonald, the list just keeps going on and on. Martin Kaut, up and down. So let's talk about it right now. Here's the poll. Which call-up do you think will stick around? Jean-Luc Foudy absolutely crushed the results, getting 71% of 305 votes. I'll start with Jackie, because this is a Jackie script today.
oh, boy, I'm excited. Yeah,
so you tell me, do you agree with the vote here? And if not, how would you have voted?
If I'm voting with my heart, I would have said, yes, Foudy. I'd love to see him stick around. If I'm voting for what actually will happen, no. I don't think he's going to stick around very much longer at all. Like, not even probably a week, I think. Okay. If I'm picking, I'd say Ben Myers.
Right.
The organization's been pretty committed to him. They might have liked him to be in the AHL a little bit longer, but the way that they've used him since he's been back up, like he's playing center instead of Newhook, and they're getting him out in some offensive situations. I think they're even starting to use him a little bit defensively. So I think those are indications that he's going to be the one that they want to stick around when the last man's standing.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of the game plan going into the season when everyone other than like Landeskog was seemingly going to be healthy. So I think that that's an astute observation to think they'll probably double back to having Ben stick around. He did get 22% of the vote, which I think is telling. I think that's more than I expected just because he hasn't played that much. And I think that's all a lot of votes just based on recall from last season. So Evan, tell me, do you think that's the case? Did he get more votes than you thought, or do you think this is about right?
I actually think he got about what I thought he would get. Okay. Because realistically speaking, I voted for Ben Myers. I mean, that's what the head says. Of course the heart says Foudy, right. But you know, With Myers' experience already with the Avs, you know, dating back to last season, even though it was, you know, 9 games and then the start of this season too, you know, he's in the team, I guess you say, in quotation, in the teams, you know, before obviously getting sent down to the Eagles to develop a little bit more and, you know, do all that. So, you know, I think he's just kind of the realistic choice that's going to stick around. And I mean, how old is Foudy? How old is Foudy, Jackie?
20.
Yeah, 20. And Myers is like 23.
Yeah.
So, you know, he has the age experience. He has a little bit more, you know, to his liking than maybe Foudy does. And while Foudy has looked phenomenal and, you know, as you said, blew the pole out of the water and also has been blowing people away with his play, despite not putting up a point yet. You know, I think if he gets more time in the AHL, the Avs might think that he'll get better. But then again, we've already seen that he can do it at the NHL level. So it's a very weird side to be on either way. I feel like it could go either way, but realistically, Myers over Foodie.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because like the dialogue online seems to be like Jean-Luc Foodie or Martin Kaut. And I feel like that's an interesting thing to be comparing because they're basically the same. And we'll get into that a little bit. I might have just spoiled my own segment, but what are you going to do? Anyway, so I'll go down to you, Ezra. You know, yeah. if it is Ben Myers and Jean-Luc Foodie, if that's the choice, I think Ben Myers, just in terms of his position, sets himself apart in terms of experience too. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, they both technically are centers, but Foodie hasn't played center right at the NHL level, really. He's been playing on the right wing. And I don't know. I think the organization clearly trusts Myers more. And just looking at fancy stats right now, expected goals for between all these guys, Ben Myers is way ahead. It's right. A smaller sample size. He's only played a couple of games, 8 games or so. But yeah, he's way ahead on that. And I think just watching his play on the ice, he seems to be making more subtle plays that make a difference all over the ice, whereas Foodie is making really nice big puck plays in the offensive zone that people, you know, are catching people's eye. But I don't know. On the other side, though, the flip side, if we're trying to push for Foodie, I'd say his speed and tenacity are something that sets him apart from a lot of the other guys that the Avs have called up, mm-hmm. And fits the bottom line role that he's been asked to play really well. Yes. But of the other guys, the closest one to him in terms of that is Ben Myers, I would say. So I just think Ben Myers is playing a better all-around game, causing more havoc offensively, causing about the same amount of havoc offensively, but with a more solid defensive game on the other side.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And what is,
go with Myers.
If you don't mind me asking, what is Ben Myers' expected goal number?
His expected goal percentage is 60 right now, okay. Fourth on the team, but behind Shane Bower, Sampo Ranta, and Charles Hudon.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm surprised to see Hudon up so high, honestly.
Yeah, that is surprising.
Like, probably a lot of offensive zone.
Yeah.
Play,
yeah,
I yeah, guess. Yeah.
So I'm surprised to see Shane Bower's on that list. He had one chance in
his one game was pretty yeah. amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
In his 1 minute shift. I mean, what can you
well,
do?
Well, that's a good yeah. segue into my next segment, which was me comparing two players blindly, but it's not so blind in this moment. Basically, I wanted to point out, and I'll just do the reveal because we all know, my whole thing is that if you're really talking Jean-Luc Foodie and you're talking Martin Kaut, you're talking about two players in terms of production that are almost identical in that they don't really produce all that much just yet. So to me, it's like you would default to the experience of Kaut. You would default maybe also on the other side to the speed of Jean-Luc Foodie. So, like, to me, this is a conversation of splitting hairs. I think these two compared to Ben Myers is a whole nother conversation, but I think Ben Myers wins that easily. So, to me, if it's between these two, you can see, like, Kaut's got one goal he's been expected to get to. Foodie's got none. He's been expected to get 1.2. This was a couple of days ago before last night's game, so I don't know how these numbers have changed. But Foodie just needs to get on the board. And even in the event that he does, he's still not producing more than Kaut. So I think it's better to insulate him, send him back down to the AHL, let him score, let him get that finishing touch. That seems to be the only thing he's lacking right now. He's just as fast as anybody on the ice. He just needs that killer instinct, I think. What do you think about that, Jackie?
There's a lot to unpack here. I'd say in the organization's eyes, to me, it seemed more Myers versus Kaut. Because yeah. if you look at it, it's truly been like one or the other that's been up in the NHL. It seemed like it was really between them in training camp, which one was going to stick with the team and which one was going to get cut. So I think those two play more of a similar role just because, like, the maturity in their game, they could play more defensively, even though that's sort of what Myers had to fix up in the AHL. So, but I think they see him as a defensive player once he gets more polished in that area.
Right.
But I think when you're asking, like, what do people like about Foodie, I do think he fits the team better stylistically than Kaut because of that speed and that tenacity and those flashy puck plays that people love to see. When we're talking about production, though, like, I think Kaut's one goal, two assists is a pretty high bar for the call-ups and for the bottom six because no one's even approached that. Like, it sounds silly to say, like, oh, 3 points is such an impact, but they're not even close. Like, let's even see how long it takes for anybody to score 3 points. Even Myers, for example, like, I think he will definitely best that, mm-hmm. but how long is it even going to take him? And if you look at Kaut's, I mean, it sounds so silly. He has 3 points, he has one goal, but nobody on the team is scoring at 5-on-5. His per 60, even though those 3 points at a per 60 rate is like midpoint on the team.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's higher than half the team. And it just sounds so silly when you say, like,
yeah,
how Martin Kaut barely produced either. It's like, in the context of the role and the time on ice he had, he really did have decent amount of production. And his shot rate, like his Corsi 4 rate, mm-hmm. I think is, it, once you take out the very small sample size people like Bowers, right. like fourth on the team. And so, I think all of that has gone really underappreciated because you say, oh, Martin Kaut has had this chance and he did nothing with it. To me, this is not nothing. And then when you compare him and Foodie, like Foodie's the new guy. No, nobody's seen him in the NHL. Kaut's been around for 5 years. So part of it is he was the 16th overall pick and the expectations. The other thing is just, it's been 5 years, you know, why aren't you on the team kind of thing. So I think the lens that these guys are looked at is a lot different too.
Yeah, that's a good point because it's like we're not expecting any of these guys to be like producing out the wazoo. They're destined to be fourth liners or depth players, you know what I mean? And this current team, what the future holds, we don't really know. I think in the future you put your money on Jean-Luc Foodie because he has more of that future ahead of him in terms of development, time to develop. But like, the same is true for Ben Myers in my mind. In fact, I think Ben Myers is on the other side of some more development based on his path to the NHL. So it's an interesting thing. I think the more we're talking about this, though, the better. Because if we're talking about this, that means that the Avalanche are getting healthier, right? Because none of these guys should be in the top six. And as soon as that's not the case, that means they're being talked about in the way they should be, which is, to your point, Jackie, like, we're looking at them from the scope of like needing depth scoring and asking kind of too much of guys, to be honest. That's really not who these guys are right now anyway. So that's something we'll touch back on later on after we have our guest. But I did want to talk about something that I didn't put in the script. I totally forgot. But there was an interesting little snippet I saw. I think Evan shared it on his Twitter. Yeah. Basically, they were interviewing Matt Duchene and they were asking him about the trade and kind of the background of how the trade, infamous leaving the ice in the middle of the game kind of thing, went down. And basically, he said it, to paraphrase, it was one of the coolest moments of his life that Sakic put his hands on his shoulders and said, "I did this for you." And he quoted, said that Sakic seemed a bit emotional when he said that. And I'll start with you, Evan. What's your like reaction to that? And does it tell you anything you didn't already know?
Well, funny enough, my first reaction was, for those of you that don't know, I run the Mile High Hockey Twitter account. And I saw someone like the tweet about like Matt Duchene. And I was like, okay, thinking it was from like 5 years ago. And then I look on Twitter and I'm like, look at this article that was just published. And I was like, I was so confused. I was like, what is this, huh?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, wait, that was just published like minutes ago. What? So then I had like watch the clip and everything. But after watching the clip and, you know, kind of diagnosing it, like, it's really interesting and kind of, I guess, I don't know if bizarre is the right word, but I mean, it's the best one I can think of, yeah. Bizarre. is that, you know, obviously the way it happened was ridiculous. I mean, getting pulled off the ice just minutes in the game in New York when it all went down.
It's like WWE.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm interested to hear what Joe Sakic has to say about it. I think I saw you comment about it, Jackie, under the article, but I want to hear what Joe Sakic has to say and like what he thinks about how that all went down, because if it was really that emotional for him and that hard to let him go, you know, that tells a lot.
Yeah, that basically means that Sakic also thought that they didn't really have much going for him, if that's really how he felt, which I mean, you can't look at the return and really make that argument in my mind. Like, he was pretty aware of what the heck he was doing, obviously. There is some luck involved in how the trade shook out. There's also some bad luck involved in how the trade shook out. So, Ezra, I'll just to kind of expand on that, like, do you think we'll even get a rebuttal from Sakic in terms of responding to this?
I'd be surprised. Yeah. I'd be surprised if he had a comment about it. I mean, I think, I don't think he's really into making public comments on most things, and this seems like the kind of thing that he would just let lie.
Right.
But to follow what Evan was saying, I mean, it does make some sense to me that he'd be so emotional about it, because, you know, Duchesne was there when he took over in the front office, when Sakic and Duchesne were definitely tied together for a sure. long time, you know, and giving up on his first core, not that he was, I don't think he was the GM for the first core, but for the Duchesne O'Reilly,
right.
Gagliardi. He wasn't, he wasn't around for that. Right. He came in a little bit after.
Right.
But still to give up on the group that he had and say, all right, we're moving on to this new iteration of the leadership core with, Landis Cog, McKinnon, Ranton, and then it makes sense that would be emotional.
Yeah, I also think, like, to double down on that, like, also Matt Duchesne has been very public and open about, like, Sakic being his actual hero. So,
right,
like, I imagine that was a pretty mutual relationship in terms of respect. I imagine Duchesne probably had a little more respect for Sakic than the opposite, just based on experience. Maybe not, like, a glaringly obvious difference, but... Jackie, do you think, like, it's interesting to me that this is still Duchesne's story? You know what I mean? Like, he goes to this podcast and the questions are still revolving around years later, him leaving Colorado. Why do you think it seems like people can't just move on from this?
Well, I spent the day going to the game yesterday. So that was on my to-do list, was actually to listen to this interview.
Yeah, I listened to the whole thing too. Yeah.
Okay, so I wish I had a little bit more context to give about that. I just haven't heard it. But like, I just listened to a really fantastic interview with Zadorov, and it comes up, like, they ask him about the apps, mm-hmm. and so I guess it would make sense why that's still a very big part of Duchesne's story. I mean, he was the face of the franchise
for sure,
and so like what Ezra said is that. Duchesne was just around so long. I do think just in general, it was emotional. I think it was emotional for the organization, but I don't really believe the story that's sort of woven out there about, like, he just wanted to make the playoffs and that's why he requested a trade. I have my own theories. I've heard rumors. There were some internal issues.
Interesting.
So,
cause he says on the podcast, I'll give you a little information in terms of that exact topic. He said, in verbatim, I wanted a better opportunity. I think that I wanted to put myself in position to win and play. And the other guy on the panel says, you wanted to play in the playoffs. And the guy said, yeah. He said, obviously, they've gone into a lot of success. I didn't have a crystal ball. Nobody knew who Cale Makar was, yada, yada, yada. So that's kind of.
Yeah, see, I don't believe that because just the summer before, he was on another podcast and he was talking about how he was really thinking about signing, like, a lifetime deal with the Avs. He wanted to be an Av for life.
Right.
And this was just the summer before. And so they obviously hadn't had success. They obviously, you know what I mean? Like, something very shifted in his perspective.
For sure.
My personal thought was, when, I don't know if you all remember when Sakic said, I think it was Mikko Rantanen and Tyson Jost and Nathan McKinnon were the three untouchables.
Yeah, he did. I remember that.
And this was back when they weren't good. And I think that offended Duchesne. And I think that caused a rift how Landeskog wasn't offended that he wasn't considered an untouchable. And he went and he said he wanted to be part of the solution. And I think Duchesne took it the other way. He was offended that he wasn't named one of the untouchables. And then I've also heard rumors about some internal issues that I probably shouldn't get into because it's not public information. Right. But just that he had an issue with some of the more, let's say, senior members in the locker room okay. of leadership corps. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. I have some theories, but I'm not going to share those because I don't think that's fair.
That's good on you because I know kind of what you're leading toward, and I think that's why you got like the way we paraphrase that to not get into the nitty gritty details and the way
they say like it's not important.
Exactly. Well, and what they say is like the temperature in the room is hot, right?
Or okay, room, I think that's a good way.
The
to
room
put it.
isn't stable. We'll just put it that way. And I think that was apparent too. You talk about veteran leadership. Like as soon as the trade went down, EJ's comments are damn near legendary when he said,
yeah, very pointed,
where he said, we want everyone in this locker room wants to be here now, basically, you know? And I think that set a precedent. I think that was almost more important in terms of the trade and its value to the team than some of the return, because I feel like it was almost like something, you know how they say like some coaches take this style of being the bad guys so that the team can galvanize in hating the coach together because everybody joins together when they can hate the same thing. I feel like Duchesne was kind of that scapegoat just in terms of the Avalanche culture. As soon as they let him go, it was like, yeah, see, now we get to be who we really are, even though like the opportunity was always there. The opportunity was
It's definitely a fresh start for the organization and the core. I think it also let McKinnon be the face of the franchise. Mm-hmm. It sort of turned it over to that. So I do think there's a lot of different reasons in here. I do think Duchesne asked out. I think the reasons he did are not exactly right. What he's presenting about. He just wanted to win.
Right.
But I do think he asked to go. And so to me, going back to the original question of when Sakic said, I did it for you, to me, it just sounds like fulfilling that request. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that it necessarily got any deeper than that, but it's definitely a huge pivotal turning point in the future of this franchise. So I think that will always be a huge moment.
Yeah. And
for sure.
And correct me if I'm wrong, like timeline wise, did Makar was like on his Hobie Baker tour late in 2017, right? Or was that 2018?
No, he hadn't been drafted. He was drafted in, so he had already been drafted. Okay. Right. So yeah. He was drafted in 2017 after they had the terrible year.
Correct.
And then the beginning of that year, because I think the Duchesne trade was November 5th or something of 2017.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So it's the beginning of the following year. So yes, they already had Makar, but
he
had just barely been a freshman at that point. So we didn't know what he was going to become.
It's crazy.
So his Hobie Baker year was his sophomore year. So that was
2019 then? 2020? Maybe?
Been 2018-19.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so he hadn't even played at the World Juniors yet at the time they were traded.
That's probably more frustrating for Matt than anything else. Is like, he's like, oh God, what did I do? It's not even like he couldn't have known. He obviously, that's what we're breaking down now, is he couldn't have known. But it's still, I bet you, like once he saw him doing his thing, he was probably like, are you serious? This guy.
I mean, you said it. He said that he had no crystal ball, right? And it is something that is always going to be historic with this franchise is that the trade,
right?
And this just opens a whole other element of, you know, that huge turning point in Colorado Avalanche history. So, you know, you can talk about the what ifs and, you know, the what if Duchesne had stayed? Right. What if Makar, you know, stayed another year at Boston College or whatever, you know? So, you know, there's lots of things you could dive down into this, but ultimately at the end of the day, Duchesne has moved on. I think so, anyway, for the most part. Duchesne has moved on. He's probably sick of the questions.
Exactly.
If Joe Sakic ever gets asked about this, you know, like Ezra said, I would be surprised.
He might just give him the look.
Yeah, like I'd be surprised if Sakic says something about it. And ultimately, you know, we have a Stanley Cup at the end of the day.
Yeah,
and
that's a good thing to have. Right? Don't change a thing, because then if you change something, that means you change one of the coolest.
Yeah, there's a lot because I really feel like they needed Girard, especially in those early years. Like I don't think they make the playoffs that first year if they didn't have Girard. And then, you know, was Byram the piece that put them over the top for the Stanley Cup? I think that's a fair argument. Yep. If you go to the butterfly effect, there were so many different things, the culture change, what they got in return. So he shouldn't what if too much. Like, the guy that I feel a little bit bad for is Jost. I mean, that's truly like the what if he really should have been there lifting the cup, you know, that one's painful.
Yeah, but what makes it so frustrating is, like, Nico Sturm didn't do much. You know, if Nico Sturm helped, then sure, but he
didn't.
He's a good guy. Not to denigrate Nico.
I had not heard the Untouchables before, and maybe that was just me being out of tune 5 years ago with the Avs, but I had not heard that Tyson Jost was included on that list.
So yeah, he was. He had just been drafted.
Yeah, he
had just been. I think that was like maybe a year after he was drafted. So, he was one of the Untouchables.
Yeah.
So, just
to put it in like total clear terms, the entire return for Duchesne, after all was said and done with draft picks and stuff, this is what it sounds like: Andrew Hammond, Shane Bowers, Bowen Byram, Matthew Steinberg, Sam Girard, Eustace Annunen, Daniil Zuravlov, and Vladislav Kamenev. That's a lot. And not all of it hit, right? Yeah. But it's like when you play roulette, if you get to put more chips down on more numbers, your likelihood of hitting is better. And it seems like this was really the best thing for the Avalanche at the time. Because what Avs really lacked was prospects in their system at the time, and we got a lot of them, and then we also hit on Bowen Byram and Sam Girard pretty solidly. And I mean, you could even argue Andrew Hammond, who had a couple of big games for the Avalanche, was worth it too. So just you know, I think it's cool to hear stuff like this. I'm kind of perplexed though as to why, like, it did seem like Matt was very excited to talk about this. I know we say, like, he's probably tired of being asked the question, but in terms of this topic, like, he kept saying, you know, this is like one of the best moments of my life. This is one of the coolest things that's ever happened to me, yada, yada, yada. So I was just kind of like, whoa, that's weird. So
it's something that he won't forget.
Right.
Right. I think he's kind of mentioned that already. Right. So, you know, make do of that what you will.
Right. And I wrote a very hectic, quick article once I saw this. And I just want to set the record straight. I know that this isn't the second biggest trade. It's the third. I know of the Lindros trade. I didn't mention it because we were the Nordiques when that happened. Sorry. That's just, I should have put that context in. That's my fault. But let the record show, I do know of that trade. Pretty important one. You know, I'm wearing a jersey of the guy who came in return. So.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Anyway,
and he's behind you.
Yeah, and he's so. Yeah. We were just talking a couple of seconds ago.
Just one last thought on the Duchesne thing. I also wonder if he believes that, because this was so important, that trading him brought the Avs all this stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where he was so important at the time that by moving him changed the fortunes of the franchise. So. You could look at it in a negative, like, yeah, they got rid of me, but the fact that he was so valuable and he was part of such a historic trade, I think you kind of like Lindros, he was so valuable at the time, what he meant in return for the team. So I also kind of think that's why maybe Duchesne thinks about it fondly as well.
Right.
It's just that he was so important and valuable that he made this much of a difference to a franchise.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And this is an awesome segue. I didn't actually plan for this, but
I was going to say, yeah. Brian might have some thoughts about it.
But I was going to say, we got Brian here from On the Forecheck, the SB Nation Predators site. We were just talking Matt Duchesne and his comments about the trade. What do you think of that? Just give us a little thought.
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. Yeah.
I forgot to join a little bit earlier just because I was listening to the discussion and I got kind of wrapped up in it and realized, oh, I'm supposed to be on this. So yeah, no, it's great stuff. Yeah. I mean, I kind of understand, you know, where it comes from. And I've also, you know, with his explanation for what happened, I've also heard things, but, you know, it's speculation. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, from the Nashville point of view, you know, it was very, I mean, you guys know better than probably anybody. It was very public knowledge for many, many years that Matt Duchesne and Nashville were like, that he just wanted to be in Nashville, yeah, very, very badly. And I chuckled a bit when you were talking about, you know, they always ask him about the trade when people interview him, like, well, now he knows how the rest of us felt when everybody asked us about, is Matt Duchesne going to come to Nashville for all those years? but, you know, yeah, I mean, I like what you said, talk about like his legacy, like that, knowing that he, you know, has a point, a part in the history of your franchise. And, you know, even though it is him leaving, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And, you know, you could draw a parallel to Martin Erat. You know, he was kind of a franchise guy for the Nashville Predators for all those years. And then all of a sudden he's gone and they've got some new kid named Philip Forsberg. And Martin Erat is, you know, he's still around the Nashville area. He still talks about, you know, that, you know, Philip Forsberg, like, yeah, it was a good thing. And he was happy that, you know, it was unfortunate that he had to be, you know, traded, but, you know, it brought good things to this city and to this franchise. And he was, you know, happy to be part of that. So I think you could draw that. And again, you know, he's probably asked about it so many times. You know, you think that we'd get some new information every once in a while about, you know, just something else, or something else he kind of forgot to not talk about. Right. But I was really curious listening to the, you know, I think I listened to about 5 or 10 minutes of it earlier this morning. So I didn't even know that it happened until you guys had tweeted about it. So
yeah, that's, you know, and I think you're right. Like that does seem to mean a lot to him, that no matter how, he does have a hand in the success of the Colorado Avalanche. We all know the stories that, like, that was his childhood team. He had posters of Sakic, mm-hmm, on his wall, and then he was his first GM. One of the questions they asked him, which I thought was a great question, was, did it feel terrible that you had to have a conversation like that with your childhood hero? Hey, I don't want to play for you anymore. That's a difficult conversation to have. So honestly, mm-hmm, you got to give both of them a lot of respect for handling that in a mature and conscious way that was respectful to each other. So moving on to somebody else who's not joined your franchise but has left due to the waiver wire, I think Evan has a question about that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're probably going to get sick of this question too, probably, but by the time it all is over with. But Eli Tolvanen, what's the thinking process behind the front office doing that? And then also what's their plan for the future with replacing him, I guess, for that matter?
Yeah, that's a good question. And that's a question I'm also looking for the answer to. you know, so it's something that's one of those where looking back, you go, maybe we shouldn't have been surprised that it happened. But at the same time, it's something that maybe, you know, people could have said, like, maybe this is going to happen. But you immediately go, no, they wouldn't do that. You know, this is a guy. And yes, we'll start off with, you know, from the point of view of where the front office, you know, David Poile, and maybe, I don't know, maybe the ownership, the committee, that yes, he's been scratched. He played in 13 games for Nashville this season. We saw him start to get scratched towards the end of the regular season last year. He did come in and play 3 games in the playoff series against the Avs. But, you know, this is the guy that was, you know, the Predators were coming off the cup run. You know, they picked 30th in that draft, and Tolvanen was a guy who was a top 10 talent that just started falling because of the issue with his high school grades, going to Boston College and all of that. And it was great to kind of see, because it's this exciting guy. Nashville's not known for having electric scorers, goal scorers.
Yeah.
So it was nice. It felt great because we're like, maybe we're going to have one finally. And, you know, I saw there were people, you know, people who in Nashville who won, you know, just kind of started following hockey or wasn't really aware of it. All of a sudden, I've got people being like, hey, can you send me the link so we can watch the KHL game, the Jokerit game, to see Tolvanen? Wow. And, you know, it was a fun thing. And yes, you know, that's a lot. He had a lot of expectations on him. And he also had a reputation, you know, lots of people, including people I know and respect a lot, who are, you know, have worked in the NHL, you know, called him one dimensional. And that was kind of the criticism, and it had some points. You know, they're like, he's a goal scorer. He's not going to do anything else. The Predators would be best just to sit him up in Ovi's office and let him just hammer at the puck. And, you know, he came in with Peter Laviolette once he started doing regular NHL time. And I have a personal opinion that Peter Laviolette is the coach where, you know, offensive forwards go to die, just for the fact that, you, I guess, the style he plays or something. But, you know, while he was in Nashville couldn't develop a forward to save their lives. They just couldn't do it. I mean, if you look at their roster from a couple of nights ago, you know, they've got a lot of players. I think they had like 7 former first round picks. Only one of them was from like a Nashville draft pick. And it was, you know, and it was curious. But then, as you know, Laviolette left and John Hines came in, and John Hines is known as a player's coach. He wants to, you know, focus on developing his players. And the story from when Hines came in was, we want LA to work on his 200-foot game. We want him to become a complete hockey player. And he was showing signs of it, but they're like, we're going to really put a focus on that. And if he works on that, you know, that's more important because he can affect the game, because, you know, scoring a goal can affect the game in one way, but most of the time people aren't scoring goals. And so you have to make sure you're doing your job the rest of it.
Yeah.
And so we saw him in kind of a really big role last season. You know, he wasn't just going to be this power play specialist that people had thought, but, you know, he was in there, you know, on the top, you know, in the top six. He was playing alongside Ryan Johansson. He was playing alongside, for some reason, Luke Cunningham for 82 games and in the top six, mind you.
Wow.
I always thought like, I think this guy has more potential than being a shooter. And I was like, I think he's going to develop into a pretty decent, you know, defensive player as well. And he outdid my expectations. I mean, he was one of the better, like, even strength defenders on the team, like forwards or defensemen. He's a guy that, he's not the biggest dude in the world, but this season he was out there racking up hits. He was playing physical. I mean, he had fully done what his coach had asked of him and was doing pretty good at playing, you know, John Hines brand of physical, heavy forechecking hockey, doing a great job, but the goals weren't coming. And that's a valid criticism. And he'd been healthy scratched, and people were kind of starting to wonder, like, well, if they're planning on doing something with him, why aren't they playing him to showcase him to other teams?
Yeah.
But, you know, that happened. And then there was the unfortunate timing of, you know, I think it happened all within an hour last week, where the NHLPA announced that Michael McCarron was going into the player assistance program. So he's going to take a leave of absence. And then shortly after, you know, Elliot Friedman ruined the rest of my day. And, you know, to say that, because I'm like, great, now I know what I have to talk about and think about for the next 24 hours. So it's just interesting, because this is a team that is spent a long time in what's supposed to be a temporary transition point for sure in the franchise. You know, it's, they've got guys, I mean, Matt Duchene, great example. You know, that was one of the first times that David Poile had broken his rule of not offering players, you know, no trade clauses, and they were all committed. And this is kind of supposed to be, you know, it was his white whale that got him in. They got him for the deal, and they got him for 8 years. So things went great. And last season they had to be pretty happy with the decision. You know, he broke the franchise record for goals, you know,
exactly.
Like, if it's crazy to think about it, just for the fact that, you know, Nashville's been around for over 20 years now. And until last season, they had 0 40 goal scorers. And then last season they had 2 in Forsberg and Duchene. And, you know, it sounds great, like a franchise record, but, you know, 40 goals shouldn't be the ceiling of what we expect from a player here in Nashville.
Yeah.
But he wasn't scoring goals. And I thought it was odd that, you know, a guy like John Hines, who does put a lot of emphasis on players playing, you know, all 60 minutes or whatever, you know, however many minutes they're on, And he's playing a lot of guys who are doing, you know, they're role players, but they're doing an excellent job, you know, defensive shutdown guys, guys that are in there to be on the checking line, and they're not scoring either. And in fact, really not many people on the Predators are scoring that much.
Right.
And so it was odd to see him scratched night in and night out, but then to let him, to waive him, just outright waive him and let, and, you know, and according to on Sean Shapiro said that, you know, they were confident in the front office that he was going to clear waivers.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I didn't understand.
Well, I mean, I didn't either. Yeah. I didn't either, but he fell to 21st in the waiver order, which was,
that's,
you know,
deeper
20
than,
yeah, or 19 piece. Yeah, 20. I mean, I was absolutely positive he was going to end up in Anaheim or, you know, heaven forbid, Chicago. And I mean, I don't want that for him. And but he hit last. And so, you know, I, you know, part of the reasoning is that maybe, you know, he has a year and a half left on his deal and he's going to be a restricted free agent. But I mean, it, they could have just put a sign on him for the other 31 teams that just, you know, it said Ellie Tolvanen, like, hey, free potential here. Yeah. Like that's, you know, it's one of those where you can get a guy that's like, he's doing a lot of the little things right, but he's got to develop because he doesn't quite have the talent. And then you have the guys that have a lot of talent, but it's just not manifesting right now.
Right.
And you know, and that's it. And you know, and if he didn't have the season of being a full ice player last season that he did, I could understand this a little bit more. But you know, he knew what the assignment was. He did it. He passed with flying colors. He had evolved how he played the game to fit this team's style, and was rewarded by being shown the door.
Yeah, that's...
I do think that it's crazy, and yeah. I am happy though that this worked out better for him, and I'm pretty certain he's going to be a lot happier, you know, going into to Seattle, you know, one, contending like they are, but two, it's a fun high flying offense, and that's not what Nashville has.
Yeah, and this is the kind of,
can I
go ahead? Go ahead.
I just want to sneak a real quick question here, kind of on a tangent. But one thing I had heard, and I wanted to ask you if this is true or not, is the pressure that Nashville's feeling to have a bit better of a season, get back to where they were last year, that they're shunning the youth because, correct me if I'm wrong, they sent Tomasino to the AHL, mm-hmm, and he played all last season, and Cody Glass really hasn't taken off like people have expected. So would you agree with that? Is that sort of a diminishing the youth, or is that just crazy Twitter opinion that I read?
No. I think there is, you know, I think part of that is definitely true in the fact that he, you know, a lot of, I think what's happening right now is due to the hot seat, the pressure, not just on John Hines, not just on the players, but, you know, David Poile and just everybody. You know, there's new, Bill Haslam has joined the ownership group, and he's going to become a majority owner next couple of years. And so there's probably pressure there too. And, but John Hines has had a reputation to kind of doing this. I mean, ironically, I went back and I did an interview with somebody from the New Jersey site and asked, you know, what can you tell us about John Hines? And one of the things that really stuck out to me is they said he's a player's coach, but he does have a reputation for being harder on his young players than his veterans, you know, and scratching them and not giving them time and expecting more out of them, but giving a longer leash to veterans. And that paragraph could have been, you know, the subtitle for the, you know, the story of the first half of the season for Nashville, is that's exactly what's happening. You're seeing guys like Cole Smith, Michael McCarron before he left, you know, Colton Sissons, who's, you know, kind of a great guy, but he's not performing really, but these guys have had, you know, been in the lineup every single night. But Tomasino still down in the AHL. I was certain he would be back by Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's
absolutely certain.
It's the, just going back to the Tolvanen thing, it's like, and I don't mean this as any disrespect to him as a player, but it's like when somebody just puts a really nice leather couch on the sidewalk and says, puts a sign on it that says, take if you can carry. You know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm, I just,
yeah,
it,
that's
just
a perfect analogy. Yeah. I may steal that, actually. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, if it says free, nobody wants it. But if you put on like $100 couch, then it gets, mm-hmm, stolen, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, just to kind of double back to, you know, we're talking about the way the different eras inside of the team are treated by coaching. Mm-hmm. I know Ezra has a question about a new member of the blue line. So I'll let him ask you that.
Yeah, I'm a huge Ryan McDonough fan. I was born in Wisconsin too, you know. Watched him as a Badger, and I love seeing that. It seems like Nashville always has a Wisconsin blue liner back there since the Suter days. How's he fitting in? I know he's on IR right now, but it looks like your defensive group is I'm shocked to see former Colorado Eagle Jordan Gross on your top pair, but how's it all going with McDonough and the whole defense group?
Yeah, I will say this, Jordan Gross has been a pleasant surprise. They put him up there with Roman Josi with all the injuries, and he's held his ground. I mean, he's got goals. Ryan McDonough doesn't have any goals. So, you know, who's the better player? No, but Ryan McDonough, it was an interesting trade that I didn't know quite what to think about, because I think I was mostly surprised that they traded for a guy with that much term and that much of a cap hit left. I totally understand, and you know, the fact that he's a veteran guy, you can't really quite put a price on that type of a thing, and he's got a winning, you know, pedigree, but he's an older player. And as I say that, I see he's 33 and I'm calling him an older player. I'm like, he's younger than I am, so but that's a nice little reality check today. But but he, you know, he came in, and they had said that they wanted to put him with Matthias Ekholm, but that was going to force Matthias Ekholm to play on his offside. He's going to have to switch sides, and Ekholm's been a guy, kind of a unsung hero. Like, I wish I could say that he was underrated by everybody everywhere else besides Nashville, but I think he's underrated here as well. He's been maybe one of the most consistent, you know, well-playing players this season. And he's been that way. He's kind of evolved. No longer are the days where he's waiting for PK Subban to come back and carry the puck out because he doesn't move with the puck.
Right.
You know, now he's carrying it out and entering the zone. You know, it's a big thing. And so they did that and they started the season. And it was a combination of, yeah, it's a new pair, it's a new teammate, you're on the other side. It didn't go well. Just not at all. It was bad. And so they tried a couple other things, and then they said, hey, you know what? Like, that Roman Josi guy is pretty good. Let's make him switch sides. And of course, Josi responds, gets a goal in the next game, acts like it looks like he's played that side his entire life. And McDonough, it looks like the, you know, regular Ryan McDonough. I mean, he's had a pretty good year defensively. You know, it's not been as good, but ironically, you know, if you look at, like, you know, advanced metrics or GAR, things like that, he's negative in defense even strength, but he's one of the better offensive even strength players on Nashville, which I don't know if that says a lot about McDonough or Nashville or both, but, you know, and so he's done really well. And his injury, unfortunately, you know, kind of came at a bad time because it's all snowballed. I mean, Nashville is now down four defensemen, you know, that have all started games. So McDonough, Mark Borowiecki, Jeremy Lauzon, I am totally
Alexander Carrier.
Yes, and he's my favorite guy. I'm really ashamed of myself. You know, they're all out, and so now there is three guys that are in the starting, you know, the starting defensive lineup that are on emergency loan. There are guys that spent their time in Milwaukee. You know, Kevin Gravel, Jordan Gross, and Roland McEwen. I mean, first of all, I'm astonished that you're like, oh, Jordan Gross. Like, first time I've said his name and somebody went, I know that guy. So that's cool.
Gross and McCown came from the Colorado Eagles.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So they've been fine. And you know, this is a defensive group. When you've got, still have Matthias Ekholm and Roman Josi, they can deal with it a little bit. But before he got injured, you know, McDonough has been a pretty good, you know, a pretty good player and contributor. Again, you know, he's the only guy in the room, I think, with a Stanley Cup, you know, ring. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of value in that. You know, I kind of used to joke a lot about how, when they say, like, having a veteran presence in the locker room is, you know, such a good addition, like a quality thing to do. And I'd be like, no, I don't think so. But there may be some truth to it, because who am I to say that? I've never been in an NHL locker room as a player, so what am I going to say? Like, right. I don't know, but I think he has done a lot of good. I think that he is a great guy for guys like Alex Carrier and some of the younger guys to kind of model their game at. Dante Fabbro, you know, I thought that Ryan McDonough was going to benefit Dante Fabbro the most just by playing alongside him, because, you know, Fabro's—he's still a good player. He's actually been pretty much better than most people, you know, expect out of him. But he's at that critical time in his career where he was a first-round pick. He had a lot of hype. He's come in. He's kind of performed at times to hype, but he's getting to that age, part of his career where, you know, the options are opening up, and what is he going to do and what's the team going to do? And I think a guy like Ryan McDonough would be excellent for him. And so,
yeah, that was the pair I was expecting to see. I figured it'd be Ekholm and Yossi, you know, with Yossi moving to the offside eventually. Because you know, McDonough's getting up in age. I didn't think he'd be the number one pair for y'all, but yeah, Fabbro is just not, I don't know. He's not who they said he was going to be yet. Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but that's also, I think part of that is a byproduct of being coming to Nashville. You know, it took a while before Matthias Ekholm kind of turned into a guy that they'd be willing to give, you know, as much money as they gave him. Yeah. It mm-hmm. took, you know, Roman Yossi took a little bit of time. I can't say it was that much, but to kind of develop into that guy. Ryan Ellis, another guy, first round pick, you know, highly touted defenseman that was drafted. It took him a little bit of time. And, you know, it seems like Nashville just churns out these defensemen yeah. all the time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, half of them leave.
Sam Gerard.
You know, he's. Okay. Yeah, I was just getting ready to say that because let me tell you, I'm a fairly new Predators fan, and one of the first things I ever went to was development camp, and I got there and I was watching, you know, I'd seen a little bit the previous season, but I was like, man, I love this, watching this Sammy Girard kid, like this is the guy. It's like on Twitter, I'm like, this is my guy, I love this dude, and loved watching him that season. And of course, it was the first of many times I learned the lesson I should never talk about a player that I love, because he will inevitably be snatched
That's
away
my
from
Tyson
me.
Berry story too, so
exactly. But you know, I think he's not an offensive guy, and so when you're on a team with guys like Ryan Ellis before and Roman Yossi now, you're gonna get judged a little bit, and mm-hmm. and also just for the fact that, you know, it's very difficult to quantify defense. You know, the only thing you remember about defense is when they screw up.
Get that's scored,
you
know, on. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's hard to kind of, like, you know, a guy could be playing a near perfect game but happen to be there, like make the one mistake at the end to give up a goal, and you're like, he blew it, like this game was awful because of him,
right?
And I think Dante Fabbro gets that, like he should. I thought he'd be a little bit further in his development, and I'm sure that the coaching staff thinks that too, but you know, I don't think it's time to give up on him. But then again, I've said that about other players recently, and look what happened.
Yeah,
so.
And I think the injuries have played an mm-hmm. important role on that situation mm-hmm. in terms of his development. And in the meantime, with some of those injuries to the back end, you've also had to deal with your goaltender kind of being there and not being there. But I know Jackie has a question about Yossi Saros. He had a pretty solid performance last night, I believe. Jackie, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to, because for me as an outsider, I think of Nashville as like their identity is so much in their goaltending. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. just looking at his numbers, the last time I looked at it, I think save percentage was 908. That could have changed after last night, but that's probably not what you're expecting out of him. Do you feel like the goaltending has been disappointing, or is that just more of a function of the team in front of him and he's doing all he can? So I was just curious if there's anything, any insight you could give on, because I don't want to go just by the numbers. That's why I'm asking.
You picked the right, I guess you may have picked the wrong person then if you don't want to go by the numbers, but no,
well,
but
the
I'll start by
numbers,
saying,
let's just
yeah,
say.
I'll start out by saying that, you know, Yossi Saros for a lot of his career, minus last year, had a reputation of, it took him about 10 or 12 starts to really get going. Just played, and again, I say average or like under, you know, below expectation for Yossi Saros is still pretty good. But you know, and that's, we saw that. But you know, I was looking at this and looking at it again and watching last night when he was sensational, because he's been that way all year, and looked at some of the metrics. He, you know, he's at 11th in the league all situations for goals, you know, goals above expected, which is a big indicator of the defense is just a, you know, is Swiss cheese, and he's doing a good job. You know, they should have been 10 goals, but he, you know, he let in 5, so actually pretty good. But he's done really well. He's 10th, I think, at 5-on-5 at penalty killing. He's actually gotten pretty good, a lot better just over this season with his penalty killing. But again, also that's a product of the team in front of him being bad. Oh, wow, he's 5th. Yeah, so there you go. So yeah, the record obviously doesn't reflect it. And the save percentage, I think he's at 91.2 right now, maybe. It's not what we expect in Nashville, you know, just because there's high expectations. But he's still performing at a top 10 level. It didn't seem that way to start, but he's doing a great job. And I will say this, surprising me, I was big critic of this move and the thing that was going around it, but Kevin Lankinen is also sitting up in the top 20, you know, at all situations. Like, he's also doing a pretty good job. And I think that's, you know, a credit to one, he's on a bad team now, but he was on a much worse team last year in Chicago. So, you know, here he's like, oh man, this is great. I'll take this all day. Yeah. he's like, they're scoring 2 goals a game. Whoa. I'll take it, you know? but you know, like he's done really well. And I think a lot of it's, you know, the goaltending coaching, Ben Vanderklok is kind of a, you know, a little bit of a league legend as far as, you know, him and the name is escaping me, that who went with LaViolette to Washington. But, you know, I think last night was the perfect time to have the game that he had and the Predators to lose in the way that they did for people to finally realize,
oh,
none of this is on UC Saros. Like, yeah. I mean, yes, I mean, and this is, you say like none of this is on him, but like, yeah, you can point to probably 3 or 4 games where he could have played better and the team would have won. But that's, you know, 1 or 2 games. Yeah, that's going to be, you know, those might be still the same amount of games at the end of this season. Right. You know, he was the reason that Nashville is in a lot of games, you know, late. And Pekarinen was the reason that Nashville was in a lot of games, including the Stanley Cup final, you know, late. Like, it's they kind of saved goaltending in Nashville has kind of saved the coaches and the front offices, you know, their bacon a little bit. But also came at the expense of, well, we're doing fine with them, so we don't need to add more scoring. So it's easy to see it just because his record's not very good, and you'd like to see that better, and you'd like to see him, you know, with a better save percentage. But considering what he's having to deal with, he's doing a pretty good job. Yeah. And even if he wasn't, he's still doing a pretty good job.
Well, yeah, and we'll find out, because, you know, it's interesting now that the Avs and Preds are an interesting matchup these days, because, like we've
talked
about.
Is interesting the word you guys use?
Yeah. I would say fruitful as well, but I didn't want to be mean.
that was actually much nicer than I was going to say about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, but
I do think it's an important matchup, because the Avs have definitely to keep ahead of them in the standings.
Not to mention, so it does, we're emulating we're trying to emulate that goaltender defense production. Defense identity is kind of like what we've become as well, on top of, you know, our top 6 talent, scoring talent, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
We're the fast team, but I think we're also trying to emulate. I mean, last year our defense scored more than any defense ever. So it's pretty clear that that's the focus. Obviously having Cale Makar helps that number.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, like you said, Jackie, this is an important matchup standings-wise, especially given where the Avs sit in their health and within the, you know, the true context of this season. It's really important for the Avs to keep winning divisional games, and it's just as important for the Predators, because the Preds are, like you said, there's a lot of pressure for them to stick around and be a part of the playoff picture just like they were last year, and then actually, you know, maybe make a win a round or two is probably, I imagine, your expectation, or no?
I think yes and no. So yeah, I think that getting to the playoffs is obviously one of those milestones, and then, you know, then the coaches in front office say, well, you know, we don't want to just make it, we want to win.
Thing. Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think the last playoff series win was the time that Philip Forsberg turned Sammy Girard into a pretzel, that between the legs move. But it's been a while, and a lot of fans have kind of come to the conclusion that, like, yeah, Nashville sneaking into the playoffs that last year has been actively harmful to this franchise because they're not making changes, and they're picking 18th, 19th. You know, without the year that they had a few years back, you know, they actually got into the lottery, and that's how they ended up with Askarov, you know, and now you've got another guy in the line of goaltenders. But yeah, it's important. I think implications or not, I think it's important that Nashville tries to win some games, just any at this point. And it's not necessary, because they're a 500 team, or under, just slightly under 500 team. And that's, I mean, if that's a pretty accurate description of just the team in general, that just average, just, you know, but they've got a schedule the rest of this month. I mean, they started off the month great. They had a back-to-back, they beat New Jersey in overtime, and then beat, the Islanders 4-1 first 2 days of the month. Great. They had a 5-day break, oddly enough, and they haven't won since. They have faced, let's see, in order: Tampa, Ottawa, St. Louis, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and now coming up the rest of this month at Colorado, Edmonton again at Chicago, versus Colorado again versus Dallas, Anaheim, and then closing the year out against Vegas in Vegas. So, I would say, compared to a lot of my peers in Nashville, I would say that I'm a little bit more silver linings kind of optimistic than most. I'm being optimistic when I say 4 points would be good out of the next, what is that, 7 games?
Wow.
4 points would be good for what this team is. And I'm saying 4, but just because I'm giving them an extra point than what I think, because somehow they managed one last night. And it's, again, it's not necessarily, you know, this. You have to put blame on the players. You have to put blame on the roster and how things are going. But this is a better team on paper than they were last season.
Right.
I mean, they just, you know, they got, you know, the guys that were really kind of dragging them down, and I feel bad because I pile on Luke Cunningham all the time, and I don't know why. But you know, those type, he got sent off, and they got a return for him. You get a return for him, but not for Tolvanen. It's interesting, but you know, like, it's for that. You have Forsberg, you've got Duchesne, you have Roman Josi. These guys all had sensational years. You know, there's Alex Carrier, who I thought was actually the best rookie on the team instead of Tanner Janot. You know, and these guys, they're all there, and it hasn't changed. They're in, you know, year 3 with Hines and his system. They know what they're doing. They're not making any huge changes, and it's just a completely different looking team.
Yeah, that's an astute observation. I think you put it really well when you said getting into the playoffs last year might have been the worst thing for this franchise, because you guys are like in that weird limbo state, which I think the Avs, funny enough, the last time we were there was when we kind of snuck into the playoffs on the back of a rookie Nathan MacKinnon performance and really had a gut check playoff series against the Wild. And then the following year, we all know what happened. I think like that's a great example. And to make an even stronger comparable, we went out and we got Aginla, and we went out and got some of these veteran guys, because that was the thing everybody said was missing. And that blew up in our face pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I was also just Patrick Waugh being Patrick Waugh.
Patrick Waugh leaving a month and a half before the season started or the camp started wasn't very, very ideal either. But yeah, man. Well, thank you, Brian, so much for coming on with us, man. We really appreciate having you. Before I let you go, though, I have two more things. One non-hockey related. Country music fan, yes or no? And do you like and wear cowboy hats?
Not really a country music fan. My parents listened to it growing up, so like a lot of people my age, I've got a fond memory of 90s stuff.
But, gotcha.
You know, same. I don't mind it. It's just not for me. And I do love wearing cowboy hats. Woo! If I had one, but I haven't had one since I was actually working out on a research farm in college.
Nice.
So yeah. I'm the most, if you look at me, I do not look like I belong on Broadway when I'm walking to the arena, when I go cover the games. I'd like, had this ain't a Nashville guy. So
yeah, well, you know, I wish cowboy hats were more of a thing here in Colorado. I think Cale Makar's the only one who gets to wear one here, but you know,
start it, Adrian.
Yeah.
Start the trend.
There is nothing stopping you.
Next cast, I'm coming full cowboy hat. But you know,
I'll wear a cowboy hat if you
Oh, it's on now, baby.
For real, but I got one.
So and then the last thing, we usually all do a bold prediction here on the panel after our guest. And this episode, I just wanted to let the guest only give a bold prediction. So what's your bold prediction for tomorrow night's matchup between the Avalanche and the Nashville Predators?
Okay, yeah, I've got one. You know, we just talked about Nashville's in a turning point in their season, a critical point that, you know, they've got to take any points they can get if they're even hoping to stay relevant. They have been performing very badly. They haven't won a game since December 2nd. They do not match up talent-wise. Teams with speed like Colorado, like Edmonton, have done nothing but terrorize the Predators for a few years now. And everything points that this should be a very one-sided game, and the game will be, you know, exactly what we all think. But my bold prediction is, because I've said all of that, somehow Nashville's going to win 5-2, and it's going to make no sense to anybody.
All right. Well, you know, I don't tell anybody this, but I guess I am now. This is how I get all my wagers. I just ask all the people around the hockey world, what do you think? And then I just steal that information, and hopefully it's profitable for me. So
don't take my advice profit. Then. No, don't do that.
Well, and Jackie has a great approach, and this is enabled if your what you said is true, if I make that bet and that and it does happen, at least you know I won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's exactly yeah. right. Yeah.
Brian, thank you so much for coming on the cast with us, man. Brian from On the Forecheck, please go head on over there to ontheforecheck.com. You'll see everything Nashville Predators. You'll see some solid work from Brian himself. We really appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. This has been a blast.
Heck yeah, we'll do it again next time. Yeah.
Sounds good. Right. Yeah. What, in a week, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Have a good one, Brian.
You too.
Yeah. So that was an awesome conversation, because I think, Jackie, you put it best when you said, like, this is an important matchup still, despite where the Predators are in terms of their outlook. This is an important matchup specifically for the Avalanche. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't looked at the standings this morning, but I think it's closer than, then we would lie.
Then we're comfortable with.
Exactly.
Yeah, so right now Nashville's sitting with 28 points and 28 games played. Exactly the same amount of games played, and the Avs have 32. So we're only those 4 points, he says, they're going to get in the next 7 games behind. So apparently he thinks 2 of those points are coming tonight, though. So they're going to get off to a hot start, according to his bold prediction. I really liked his take on his team. Like, he seemed very very like realistic. You know, a lot of fans can kind of get into that sycophant mentality where it's like everything they do is right and I'm just waiting for them to win the cup, and it seems like he's like very, very locked in on exactly where the Predators are. And Ezra, I thought it was every single time you mentioned that there was a Wisconsin Badger on a hockey team, my mind just explodes, because I'm like, I know that the Wisconsin Badgers are an incredible hockey college, but just like, just to think like geographically, that just doesn't make sense to me. I know they get a lot of snow, but it's the same thing. Like when they say that kid, what's his name's from Arizona, night,
Austin Matthews.
No. And the kid, isn't Tage Thompson.
Oh yeah. Tage Thompson.
Too. He's from Arizona too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, these kids are popping up in random places here in America, which goes to show hockey's growing in the U.S., which is cool. That's a cool thing. Are you guys mad at me for not letting you give bold predictions? Because I'll give you
one. Yes, because I actually had one.
Okay, fine. I take it back. You guys can do bold predictions. Jackie, yeah. You first.
Well, my bold prediction was just that they were going to score 2 5-on-5 goals tomorrow.
All right. Oh. That is bold. That is very bold.
Right. I know. After I'll give a little spoiler alert. I'm writing something about their 5-on-5 woes. Okay. So I felt like that had to be my bold prediction. I was almost going to pick one, but Mikko did get a 5-on-5 goal yesterday. So that it's not so bold, but two, yeah,
I'll be
waiting. Be pushing it.
I'll be waiting for that article, because I'm interested, because I know you always do a little bit of a deep dive on some of the numbers behind all of what we see. So that's exciting. I'll be sure to check that out. Ezra, your turn. What's your bold prediction?
Ooh, okay. I think just to make our conversation about who to keep up in the NHL between Foodie and Myers more complicated, they're both going to score.
That'd be fun. It probably would be 5-on-5, so there you go.
Yeah,
Foodie will be on the power play.
Ooh.
Myers will be shorthanded.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay.
That just went from bold to like astronomically bold.
Yeah,
all
right. I get.
Yeah. All right, I'll skip myself this week, but we'll end with managing editor himself, Evan. Your bold prediction.
I kind of want to go down the same route of goal scoring as the other two have had. This power play needs something going for it. I say we finally get a power play goal.
Finally.
Yeah, that'd be bold too.
And then it rains and snows simultaneously.
It's amazing that both the power play and 5-on-5 are not scoring. It's
because they're missing so many key power play players. You look at Landeskog.
Well,
by the way, side note, Landeskog, last night's game against Sabres, Landeskog would have been all over it. He would have been all over it.
People forget how valuable he is beyond wearing the C and being incredibly handsome.
I need this man to come back, please.
Yeah, please. Look how handsome he is in that red light. Most people can't pull off red light. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, like I agree with you. That's interesting. I think he is – obviously, Nathan MacKinnon is somebody you want on the ice at all times. Nichushkin the same way. Like, who we've lost, it hasn't hasn't been, you know, like one's better than the other or whatever. But I will say Landeskog, I think him being out has had the biggest impact on a negative impact on this team of any of the injuries. And I don't think that's any slight to him. I think it's like something that he knew was going to happen and that, well, there was going to be some sacrifice after the fact last year when they made the cup run, which goes even further to show you what kind of captain he is. Because I imagine this was in the back of his mind when he was coming back, like, yeah, I'm going to come back now, but I'm probably going to miss some time next year if I do. So kudos to that guy. Hopefully he does come back soon. I thank you three for coming on today. I know we did a little bit earlier cast than we typically do, but I kind of like it. I still got like the caffeine from my coffee in me and everything. So it's pretty cool. So thank you. Thank you folks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks, Adrian.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
thanks for hosting.
Heck yeah. Well, that does it for us, folks. Please be sure to like this video, subscribe, share it with your fellow Avalanche fans. Head on over to milehighhockey.com if you want to see how terrible I am at writing and how good the three of these people are. You'll see why I like the camera and the microphone a lot more if you go read one of my articles. But that being said, we really appreciate you folks. Head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Audible. After all these live broadcasts, our podcasts are available the next day, typically in the evening. So if you subscribe, you'll get a notification as soon as we drop the next cast. You can kind of double back on some of the topics and feel free to clip any of this stuff and throw it in our face when we're wrong, because I love trying to prove that I'm never wrong. Ask my wife. So, Adrian from Mile High Hockey here. We love you. Go Avs.